From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the second day of March 2018. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and will help us sift through all the macroeconomic discussions that took place in Chicago, Anaheim, and Washington, D.C. all this week. And then a bit later in the program, we'll look at the weather forecast on the global front, that with Agrible's Eric Snodgrass, and we'll do it all right here on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Mike and Eric, by the way, will join us next Tuesday at the Beef House. I hope you do too, for the all-day Ag Outlook. Tickets are just $30. That includes your morning coffee and a roll from the Beef House, that great Beef House lunch, a dozen analysts. We'll talk about dicamba with Aaron Hager. Eric Snodgrass will do the weather. Mike Zuzulo will be here along with the rest of those analysts to discuss the marketplace. And we'll take up some changes that have happened at the CME Group in Chicago that have been buried a little bit in the news, and try to discern whether those will make a difference to you over the long run. Things like block trades and variable rate storage for both corn and soybeans. Oh, Section 199A2. So all of that next week at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets are just $30. Don't wait. You need to buy them now. Just go do it right now at willag.org or by dialing 800-898-1065.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
When you're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon, the second day of March, we're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. What a week it's been, Mike. I didn't know whether to pay attention to Chicago or Anaheim, where the Commodity Classic was going on, or Washington, D.C., because there was just lots of stuff going on every place.
Yeah, you almost felt like it was a blizzard of news, and you had to keep your make up a cot here and right next to your computer so that you wake up every couple hours and check the news. It was amazing. I guess the one thing we can say definitively, at least in my opinion, Todd, is that with this kind of information going on, number one, if you aren't signed up for the Beef House meeting, and if you haven't decided to come to Mattoon yet the next night, please reconsider, because I think it could help you quite a bit, make some better decisions. And the thing that I'm really going to focus on is continuing the mindset of selling for profit between NAFTA and North Korea and China, and now the biofuels policy, and now the steel and aluminum tariffs. I just don't think there's any good reason to try and ride the bull this year. Save that for 2019, and let's get a weather market here in the United States started before we mess with that.
You know, on my Twitter account, I try to convince folks that this was a negotiating tactic. So you put it, because Canada, we import 16% from Canada steel and 9% from Mexico. And maybe it is. Who knows? It's pretty chaotic.
Well, here's the big deal, I think, that we're going to have to work through in all seriousness, is we've got a weaker dollar and a sharply higher yen. And we had a very nice close for the week in the crude oil and the metals. So that is commodity friendly after the steel and aluminum tariff issue hit the news wires. What is not commodity friendly, and what is not equity market friendly either, is the fact that we are now hitting some new highs in the short term interest rates. The 2-year, the 5-year yields are now going even higher here at the end of the week, as we've taken money out of the stock market and pushed it over into the interest rate vehicles. And I think this is where the commodity sector has the most to lose down the road, maybe in the second half of 2018, something we've talked about quite a bit on this show. I think it's still very, very much a red hot issue when it comes to the upside potential in the grain markets in the medium term down the road. In the short term, if you've got weather problems and supply issues, and you've got people like AgroConsult or AgRural or Informa, whoever, coming out and cutting Argentine production by a couple more million tons than probably what the trade's trading, and you still don't have rain on the horizon for the hard red wheat belt or the soybean belt in Argentina, why would you worry about whether China is going to cancel beans, especially if they're picking more up on this morning like they did?
Right. So they're in the marketplace this morning, picking them up at a pretty fast pace. I suppose they could be trying to do that before, I don't know, they before next week. And if the Trump administration actually follows through and puts the tariff on Chinese steel and some kind of trade war ensues or tit for tat between the two of two countries might take place. So there's just an awful lot to keep track of. I know you've been telling producers, especially on soybeans, that they need to take advantage of this and just to sell into this rally.
Yeah, we're getting close to our next objective to get up to 50% of insured bushels. And if we get another dime higher than our first objective, and we'll go up to 60% of insured bushels. My suspicion is that since I'm on the corn panel next week, my suspicion is in the soybeans is that we are going to face some significant headwinds after the crop report, because seasonally that's what we do. And some of the major years that we've had a rally that started out in late January or early February, the soybeans have had a really tough time in the middle of March to hold together their gains, and they've had a pretty decent correction, or they've made, you know, a 60-day top in some cases. And that is kind of a predicate of the USDA crop report, which we'll be right in the middle of after the meetings next week.
Yeah, by that you mean the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, which is due out on Thursday of next week. So we'll have to keep track of those numbers. You think, well, and USDA has to put all these things in place. I suppose, the ag economist there, the statisticians might really be running their pencils after, and it has to all be in place. They don't make speculation, so they have to count for what is in place. So it could be fun to see what comes out of there on Thursday, too. Who knows, I suppose, by the time we get to then. Are there changes, not counting anything that might change between now and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock? Are there changes you expect to see in that WASDE release?
Well, the big question will be their carryover number, because they're going to come together now and finally figure out after the baseline report how we're going to get more exports out of China, even if we have reduced supplies in South America, which may help stabilize our demand in the U.S. I don't think the Chinese are in the humor or can cash flow sharply higher bean prices right now because of their hog industry. And their crush industry is improving in terms of margins this past week. So that's a nice thing to see. But I guess the other thing that really is going to be interesting to see with the report is that we are only about 12 cents higher in corn lead month futures right now than we were after the February report. And the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange did not cut their corn estimate at all. And they chopped Brazil, or they chopped beans completely down, a substantial amount. So I still am of the opinion that corn has much more upside potential than the beans. And if I'm wrong and the beans go higher, the corn will be pulled up. And on a revenue per acre basis, we can do some really good profitable sales.
Hey, I got a different question. This is off the wall, and it just came to me as you were talking about China. What if the Chinese decide to do what Americans normally would do with a very low price commodity? In this case, if they decided to put something on against soybeans, what if they just walk it off? Meaning, because they already own the livestock side, they just bring it in as meat.
Oh, I think that's why I watch the pork exports coming out of China every week and every month that they update. And whenever I get updates, whenever they give updates, I watch it, because that's their plan anyway, especially with this new Silk Road project, is they're going after the Southeast Asian African population and middle income growth. And they want to be a net exporter of some of the high value meats like pork and poultry. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They don't mind importing soybeans and corn and meal and barley and the starches.
Oh, no, that's not what I meant. That's I meant, what if they buy livestock? What if they buy pork instead?
Yeah, and that's a possibility. Right now, I don't think so, because you're at about a 3-year low at the slaughter prices at some of the key provinces. So the domestic market is much, much cheaper importing right now. So that may be down the road, though, if they have problems with their livestock industry, like a disease problem.
Okay, so what else haven't we talked about? There's just so many things going on, and my mind's a clutter with them, I guess, this week.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would reiterate is at some point in time, we're going to have a situation develop here where the dollar's going to be fed by the rising bond yields, and that's the real trigger to be watching, along with the Japanese yen peaking against the U.S. dollar. Right now, we're in a commodity-friendly environment. But the other thing I would say to you too, Todd, is I don't think the wheat market is done going up. We still closed at a terrific increase for the week, and we needed to pull back a little bit, but there's not a lot of rain on the horizon, and we are going to be breaking dormance on both sides of the wheat belt.
Any concern, technically, I think the Dow's poised now to put in an outside down week.
Yeah, this is the issue, is if you get this negative feedback loop, and it could very well be the Asian markets start to feed upon the U.S. markets and vice versa. And this is where you don't want that 10-year yield to start creeping up to that 3% level. We're running about 2.86. The five-year yield did kind of manage to stay below 2.8%. These are key numbers to watch, because the U.S. and China have an enormous amount of debt we have to, both on a personal level and government level, service. And when these interest rates start to go up, the Fed kind of doesn't have really a lot of armament to, you know, combat that. So I think that's the big thing as far as what would that do? It would create another recessionary environment. That's not going to be friendly for the commodity investors.
Hey, Mike, thanks so much.
We'll see you Tuesday and Wednesday.
You betcha. That's Mike Zuzulow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. We'll be at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House on Tuesday. Hope you will be too. He'll be in Mattoon with me on Wednesday night as well. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Next Tuesday, Eric Snodgrass will join us over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Sure do hope you will too. Thanks for buying your tickets already. If you have, if you've not, purchase them right now. WillAg.org, just $30 for the All Day Ag Outlook. Speaking of Eric, he is now here to take a look at the weather forecast. I think maybe we ought to start, rather than Argentina, with the rains in the United States today. How widespread were those, and are there concerns in the places that they missed?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because when you kind of take a look at what's happened, we've been discussing, Todd, about this active Ohio River storm track. We've really seen that favored, where we've seen rains basically from eastern Texas, and that's eastern, not western, eastern Texas all the way up through Michigan and Ohio and points to the east of there. And if we look over the last 30 days, we've got some spots in between there that have seen over a foot of rain. Where we are here in Champaign, you know, we had better than 6 inches of rain in February, which had a very wet February. And why I bring this up is because this preseason rains, they're important because, you know, we did warm up enough that our top few inches of soil were above freezing. So we were able to soak some of that moisture in. Right now, if you look at a 3-foot depth of soil moisture in the state of Illinois, most places in the state are above about 60% saturated, which is good for this time of year. But that rain was causing a lot of problems. We have certainly some swollen rivers. So if we're trying to move grain on our river systems, there's some trouble with the traffic there just because of how much water is getting into the river systems. But you know what? Where it missed was the same place we've been talking about now for months, and that is Texas. Western Texas, the Panhandle of Texas, you know, those locations have been very dry all of winter, as has the western panel of Oklahoma and parts of Kansas. And I just pulled up some data the other day just to prove to myself it's been as dry as it has. The last time I found measurable precipitation in Amarillo, Texas, was on October 6th. So that's a concern, because if we continue to keep that area dry, of course, that's going to put more pressure on the winter wheat market. We do know that corn and wheat tend to, you know, want to move together. So that's an interesting thing to look out for. But I think, you know, if I just kind of worry about the thing I want to worry about in Texas, it's if that drought still is there throughout the rest of spring, that's a concern for us in the state of Illinois, because it tends to spread north and east. What'll break it down? This is what all of your listeners need to be paying attention to and listen about the weather. If we start to see troughs in the jet stream going through the four corner states, that draws moisture out of the Gulf of Mexico and puts it in the panhandles. So that's important to see here. But just to let you know, their soil moisture profile down 3 feet is between 0 and 10% of normal water. So they got a lot of precipitation that used to come in. And just think about this. They've been so dry for so long that any precipitation they get initially is going to hit that panhard soil and run off rather than soak in. So that's my bigger concern. And I'll tell you this, over the next 10 days, while we have a system coming across here on Monday, so we're going to get some great weather this weekend in Illinois, but then we've got a system we're watching out for on Monday. That next system, plus the one following it, is going to miss Texas again. So that's your biggest, I think, market story in the U.S. right now, with weather concerns at this moment.
Are there other things to worry about in the United States?
Yeah, you know, bigger picture things I'm thinking about here. Let's do real quick out in California. They got a big system coming on shore right now. That'll actually be the system that gives us rain on Monday, Tuesday this week. But anyways, that one's going to be putting a lot of snow this year in Urbana, which they need, but it's going to cause a lot of landslide, mudslide problems for them. The other spot I'm watching around the United States is going to be North and South Dakota. Some of our long-range projections right now are trying to keep the Dakotas cool for March, April, and May. And why we need to talk about this again at the Beef House is because if we end up getting cool weather there in March, April, and May, that tends to be correlated well with their prevent plant acres. So if we end up having another market story evolve over time here, it might be that we don't have as big of acreage coming out of the Dakotas as we've had in the past. Warm spring, big acres, low prevent plant acres. Cool springs, they tend to struggle. So I'm going to be watching that closely because right now they're set up to be cold.
And finally, we probably should check in on Argentina.
Yeah. You know, I have a feeling that Argentina is worse than I think it is. And the reason why is because I've heard some reports and I've seen some pictures of soybeans that they're not even filling out their canopy. In other words, you can walk down the middle of a soybean field down a row and your pants aren't going to touch the plants on either side. I've seen some pretty horrific pictures. But then again, you always seem to see some bad pictures. What I do know is that it has been exceptionally dry. Over the last 90 days, they're at about 50% of normal precipitation. And so that on their soil means that they're having some pretty major stresses. And we keep hearing the major indicators lowering their crop production estimates every single time we do a new report. The point about talking about it continually here is that Argentina and where they're on their growing season, this is like the end of a growing season for the U.S. We're talking about August, September timeframe, which means even if the rain does come in, it's not as though we can save that crop. You know what I mean? So I think we're just beyond the point that we could do some big drought busting rain that comes in and saves the Argentinian crop. So that's the real pressure we have globally right now is what's going on in South America.
Hey, thanks so much. And we look forward to having you there next week.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He will join us at the All-Day Agricultural Outlook at the Beef House on Tuesday morning. We'll start up at 8 a.m. Central Time. Hope you can be there, too. Buy your tickets now, willag.org. They're just $30.